Prior to the Roger Kyle for giving me this opportunity to speak, Chafetz Chaim gives a marshal. Someone's walking down the streets of Manhattan, and he passes by a hot dog stand, a hot dog vendor. And the guy calls him over and says, "Hey buddy, let me give you some advice. If you want to open a hot dog stand, then French's mustard is the way to go. I'm telling you, I have experience, French's mustard is the way to go." So what you do is you nod politely and everything, but you're not going to take this too seriously because this guy doesn't seem to be the most successful businessman. He has a little card on the street. But if someone passes, but if someone's thinking, let's say, of opening a pharmaceutical store or a pharmaceutical chain, and he sees that Walgreens invests in certain products, then he's going to take it much more seriously because Walgreens Kanaanar is extremely matzliach. On every single corner, you find a Walgreens, and if they have a certain business tip, then it's kedai to tune in to what they're saying. A guy's looking to invest in stocks, and Warren Buffett gives him a stock tip. Then he's going to take it very seriously because encha eitz gedayim mizu. And if he tells you that he himself invested in it, alachas kam v'kama. But says the Chafetz Chaim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give the Torah to Basar v'Dam to Klal Yisrael, so the Malachim tainted him to na hoitcha al shemayim, leave the Torah up here, leave the Torah by us. The Malachim tainted that Torah is a chemda genuza, a beloved treasure, sha'atam mishashaya ba'ab chol yoyim, that you yourself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, delight in it every single day. Every day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is kaveh itim kavyachol in Torah. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, who's Malay Chol Aretz Kevodei, the entire universe is his, and he finds that the most gishmaka thing is to be Isaac in Torah. So says the Chafetz Chaim that we have to understand matana that he's giving us is adding kate nachla b'limitzarim. It's unbelievable, but the quality of Torah and the tainug that a person can have from learning Torah. So that's about the echus of Torah. A little bit to try to get some type of glimpse about the quality of Torah. And quantity of Torah, there's a Peldik of Gemara Erevin that for some reason no one ever mentioned it. I heard a few shmuzin on Torah recently, and I haven't heard anyone bring it up, but it's enough in a Gemara. The Gemara Erevin brings out a pasuk in Zechariah that's talking about Torah Shabbat Peh. It says over there that Zechariah saw Torah Shabbat Peh was written on Megillah Afa, which means a folded Megillah. Arka Esther Ba'amah, Rechava Esther Ba'amah, a length of 20 Amis and a width of 10 Amis. So you do the math, 10 by 20 Amis is 200 square Amis. But it's a folded Megillah, so when you open it up, it's double, it's 20 by 20, that is 400 square Amis. Then the Pasuk says, K'suva Panim Ve'achar, it's written on the front and on the back. So you have double 20 by 20, that equals 800 square Amis. Torah Shabbat Peh is written on a Megillah of 800 square Amis. So that doesn't seem to be so big because this room might even be 800 square Amis or this building. Torah Shabbat Peh is written on a Megillah of 800 square Amis. However, says the Gemara, that there's another pasuk that speaking about Bria Sa'olam, I think it's a pasuk in Eiv, it said Shemayim Bazaras Tikein. The Shemayim was established with a zeres. How big is a zeres? A zeres is half an amma. So that means if you take the entire universe with all the billions of galaxies, and each galaxy has billions and billions of stars, all that endless universe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created is only considered half an amma by half of a HaKadosh Baruch Hu's amma by half of a HaKadosh Baruch Hu's amma. And Torah Shabbat Peh is 800 square amas. Says the Gemara The entire universe is only one out of 3,200, of Torah. So people look at it, people like to say Torah is a blueprint of the world, which makes it seem like Torah is a microcosm of the world. You know, an architect makes a small blueprint, and from that he builds up. He could build up tremendous blocks of buildings from one little blueprint. But here it's the opposite. The world is really a microcosm of Torah. Torah Shabbat Peh, however you understand it, I don't understand how to measure it exactly, but in a certain aspect, it's 3,200 times greater than bigger than the entire universe. So you see, whether in Eichus, in quality, and in Kamus, in quantity, Torah is like we said before, is v'ligavul, it's a nachla v'limitzarm. And this is matano that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving to us by Maim and Har Sinai. There's a Gemara in Bechairis, Daf Ches Amud Beis, where Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya was famous for his vikuchim. That means he was always having debates with different, either apikorsim or with the Caesar, the Caesar of Rome, or with the Apikorsim and the Caesar, and we're going to see in this Gemara that he debated other people also. So the Caesar of Rome asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya an extremely important and fundamental question. He asked him, what is the pregnancy period of a snake? How long does it take from the time a snake is pregnant till it gives birth or lays eggs? However you understand it. So he said 7 years. So he said, what do you mean? The Sabbe de Beatuna, the elders of Athens, which we're going to hear about in a minute, which are considered on the cutting edge of philosophy, science, technology, politics, they say that a snake, it takes only 3 years. You're arguing on them? So he says, yes, the Chachamim of Klal Yisrael are bigger than the Chachamim of Sabbe de Beatuna, the elders of Athens. So the Caesar challenges Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya to debate with them. He says, you go debate with the elders of Athens, and if you win the debate and bring them back to me, then you proved your point that the Chachmei Yisrael are greater than the Sabbe de Beatuna, the elders of Athens. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya says, no problem. He says, make for me he had a ship made for him with certain specifications which we don't have time to go in. And he traveled over there to Athens. And this academy of the Sabbe de Beatuna was in a classified location. I don't know if it's an underground bunker, but no one was allowed to know what it is. And he had to somehow figure out where it is. So what he does, a very simple etzah. He walks into a butcher store over there in Athens, I guess, and he sees a butcher skinning an animal. So he asks him, how much for your head over here? The guy says, I forgot if he says half a zuz or a zuz. Half a zuz or a zuz for the head. So he gave him a zuz and he said, okay, give me your head now. He didn't ask him how much is the head of an animal. How much is your head? Now it seems that in Athens, when a person said a word, he had to keep his word. And he actually would forfeit his head to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya unless Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya lets him off the hook. And he says, either give me your head, either show me where the elders of Athens are hidden, sequestered maybe it's called, or I'm going to have to take your head. Sorry. So he said, but they're going to kill me. Right? The law of the land is that if you reveal their hiding place, then someone who reveals their hiding place faces a death penalty. So he says, I have a plan for you. Take a bundle of reeds and carry it down the street. And it's going to be a heavy bundle, and you stop to rest, and I'm going to know that place where you stop to rest is the locations of the Sabbe de Beatuna. So that's what he did, and that's how he discovered a whole ma'aseh, how he got in. He somehow managed to make footprints facing both ways, so it looked to the guards it looked like someone had escaped from there and someone had entered in there. We're not going to go into the details now, and therefore they killed out all the guards for not being faithful to their duty, and that's how he entered, and the great debates began. So the first vikuach over there, it's a series of different riddles and pantomimes, I guess you could call them, sort of like skits, not necessarily verbal, but some of them were, you know, they did different motions to hint to different things. Now, the first debate was like this. So they said to him, the elders of Athens, I forgot to say that he made a very sweet deal with them. He said, if you guys win, you can do whatever you want to me. And if I win, you'll come eat a suit on my ship. And we're not going to have time for the end of the story now, but that was a pretty good deal. And he must have been pretty confident that the Chacham Yisrael, Taki Greater, there were 60 elders of Athens and one Chacham Yisrael. He said, you can do whatever you want to me if you win. So the first debate, they tied it to him the following. You have a person who goes and seeks to marry a certain woman. And they didn't agree to give her to give him that woman that he was interested in, that he proposed to. They rejected him. They spurned his offer. Now in those days we have to understand that when it came to marriage, things were very much dependent on class, on yichus, and on if a person was highborn or lowborn. Depending on that, he would be able to get a certain quality, a high-bred wife, or maybe a low, or more common. So say the Sabbat Beatuna, if you have this person who was rejected for a certain woman, is he going to go now and seek a higher-class woman to marry? Of course not. He was rejected from a high-class woman. He's only going to go to a lower class now, because he realizes that he's not worthy. So if that's the case, okay, we're going to explain this in a minute. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Hanan's response, very cryptic response, he took a peg and he tried to bank it into the wall, the bottom of the wall, the thick part of the wall, and it didn't go in. And then he took the peg and knocked it in higher into the wall, and it went straight in. So what's going on here with this vikuach between the Sabbat Beatun and Rabbi Shmuel ben Hanan? What's going on is like this. It's referring to when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to give the Torah, he came down to give the Torah. First he v'zarach miseir lamai. First he went to the Shem u'Yisraelim and he offered each one of them, "Do you want to be mekal my Torah?" They all answered, "Mike Sivbe, what's written in your Torah? We're good investors. We have to see if it's worthwhile." And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered each one kefi something that's connected their Teva, and therefore all the ones of them rejected the Torah. And then he came to Klai Yisrael, and Klai Yisrael said Nasr Nishma, and they lived happily ever after. So time is the Sabbat Beatuna, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu first wanted to give the Torah, which is Kav Yachol, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, having his chasnos, having a chasnos with an ummah. That's what Matan Torah Kabbalah Satayah represents. And all ummah Yisraelim rejected HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They said, we're not interested. Nothing doing. And afterwards, finally, b'diavad, he came to Klal Yisrael. No one wants me, I'm stuck, so I'm going to come to Klal Yisrael. So they were tiny. There was a long-running debate between Yaakov and Esav, which one is indeed superior. And the Sabbat Beatuna was said, you see from here that the Klal Yisrael is the lowest of the low. They're inferior to all the Shivim U'Yisraelim. Just like in the mashal that they gave, when a nobleman gets rejected from his proposal, he goes to a lower class person. He's not going to hold out any hopes for a higher class wife. So here also, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu got rejected time and time again, so he comes to Klal Yisrael because there's no other Eitzah. He was forced into it. So that was their time to how Esav and the Yisraelim are much greater and superior to Klal Yisrael. That was his time. And on that, Rabbi Shmuel ben Hananya answers the following. But before we explain his answer, there's another Gemara there's a pasuk I think in Daniel that it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Yahiv Chachma Salichakimin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Chachma to wise people, to intelligent, smart people. That's who he gives Chachma to. So a Matronisa, a Roman noblewoman who seemed to be a Gvaldga Mulumeda, she knew Tyre very well, she asked a certain Amira, she said, does that make any sense? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Chachma to Chacham? Let him give it to the fools. the Chachamim have Chachma already, and the fools are stuck. The fools are running on empty. They have nothing to them. So have Rachmanis. If you have Chachma to give, give it to the fools. Don't give it to the Chachamim. So he answered back, how about you? If two people would come to you to borrow money, a long-term loan, let's say, a big sum of money, a wealthy person asks you for a loan, and a poor person asks you for a loan. So who are you more readily going to lend to? You're going to lend your money to the wealthy person, to the rich person, because you don't want to make a bad investment. You don't want to squander your money that it's going to end up going down the tubes. If you give your money to a poor person, he's going to, the same way he was Matzliach till now, saying, who knows if he'll ever be able to pay back. So even though presumably, without thinking about it, makes more sense to spread the wealth and give it to the poor person, but it's gonna pay off a lot more. It's gonna if you lend money to a wealthy person, that's what you're gonna do. And she agreed. She was masculine. So the same thing with Chachma, says this Amayra. The same thing, exact thing with Chachma. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not gonna take the Chachma, which is a tremendous thing, and go give it to fools who are gonna squander their Chachma in Karkasiyos and Uvitaratiyos Uvesakise. They're going to go squander the chachma. Some people, I think, translate it as theaters and stadiums and an outhouse, obviously. They're going to take the chachma and squander it and use it for all types of nonsense, and it's going to be a waste. The gift of chachma is going to go to a total waste. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not going to give my chachma to a dunce who's going to pour it down the drain. I'm going to give my chachma to someone who understands how to utilize it wisely and how to use it properly. So getting back to our debate, Rav Shlomo ben Hananya was really answering like this. The fact that the Umay Sa'ilam, the Torah did not end up by the Umay Sa'ilam, and it ended up by Klal Yisrael, had nothing to do with the fact that the Umay Sa'ilam are higher born and Klal Yisrael is inferior. No. It had to do with the fact that the Umay Sa'ilam were not people capable of properly appreciating the Chachma, the Chachma that's inside the Torah. And it would have been a real waste to take this Chachma to the Torah and give it to the Umay Sa'ilam if they're not going to use it properly. It's like we spoke about before, taking Chachma and wasting it on fools. And therefore, the fact that the Umay Sa'ilam didn't accept it. It was engineered that way because the Kadosh Baruch Hu knew that for the Umay Sa'ilam it would be a waste of time for them to be mekabel the Torah. They were not to be fitting. They weren't to be fitting match for the Torah, and therefore it didn't end up going to the Umay Sa'ilam. Ankein, Klal Yisrael, which already has Chachma, then it's Sugipas, their attack makes sense to be Yahav Chachma Sal Chakimin to give Torah to people who are already Chachamim from before. So the muscle with the peg is that if you stick a peg into a thick part of the wall and it doesn't go in, it's not because it's too high, it's too low. This wall is so thick that it doesn't have the capacity. The peg doesn't have the capacity to penetrate this wall. But if you stick it in, it could even be a higher place, which is thinner and more qualified for the peg to go in. Then it's gonna be a good match. He was answering that the same way we understand with the peg, it has nothing to do with being high-born and low-born. The reason the Umay Sa'ilam refused it is not because they were too classy and for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chas V'Shalom, but rather it's because the Umay Sa'ilam were not a Tzugi Pastor Shidduch for the Torah, and Klal Yisrael was. Now there's to dwell on this a little bit more. There's a message that says, everyone heard at least a million times since kindergarten that Klal Yisrael said Nasa v'Nishma. They were makdim Nasa l'Nishma. They said Nasa first. So of course I want to ask the obvious kasha that first you have to be a Nishma, and then you can decide. Then you can decide whether you want to be a Mekabel and be a Nasa. So this medrash, which I don't think I have heard, but it might be famous by other people, the medrash says that the reason why why they're makdim nasa and nishma, because by Klai Yisrael the asiyah taka was before the Shemiyah. Why? Because Klai Yisrael for Dairi Dairitz already was doing that Asiyah. Klai Yisrael was doing that Asiyah of that Saras Adiris and the Torah. The Medrash brings down that Yaakov was Mekayim Menoichi Hashem Lekecha because he said Asiru Elohei HaNechar. Yitzchak was Mekayim Kivud Aveim by asking to be tied up by that Kedah so he shouldn't instinctively move and hurt his father. Yosef was Mekayim Lesinav with Eishas Paitifar. Yehuda was Mekayim Lesirtach when he said Ma Besek Hi Narig Yasechinu. The other Shlatim were Mekayim Lesignav when they said Ve'ech Nignav Mi Beis Adoini Kasev Aizav. So Klai Yisrael already had ingrained, they already had that Asiyah. They already, in their Yichus, in their DNA, they already had Asiyah even before the Shemiyah, even before they heard Torah from Har Sinai, they had that Asiyah. So the Metzias was, by Klai Yisrael, that Asiyah was before the Nishma. But there's another Medrash that by the Umma Sa'ilam, it's Rakad. By the Umma Sa'ilam, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to B'nai Esav and asked if you want to be Mekayel Torah, B'nai Esav said, Mike Sivbe. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered, Lo Sirtzach. So Esav says, Lo Sirtzach. Our bracha from the Zakin, from Yitzchak Avinu, was, Val Chavecha Tichya. Ritzicha is already in our DNA. And when he came to Amay Numoyev, he said, Lo Sinav. So he said, Lo Sinav. Well, we come, we're a product of Gilead Rise from Loit and his daughters. And Neof is already in our DNA. When he came to Yishmael and Sele Signoi, so Yishmael says, what do you mean? Vahu ye para adam, our Metzias is to be a para adam, which somehow means Geneva. So if we compare and contrast Klai Yisrael to Mosa Olam, Klai Yisrael already has in their DNA, they already have the Asiyah of Torah even before the Shemiyah. And the Umas Ha'olam have Farkad. They have Farkad from Torah. They have Kain Tirtzach, Kain Tignav, Kain Tinov, and therefore the Umas Ha'olam was Rechlan not a good match for Kabbalah Torah. It wasn't because they were superior and therefore they turned down HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's because they weren't a Tzugifas Shidduch Bechlal for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his Torah. It happens to be, Agav, I saw a few midrashim that there was actually a possibility of the Umas Ha'olam being able to be Mekabel the Torah. It wasn't just hype. For example, there's a midrash that says the reason the mazel, the zodiac sign for Sivan is Tu'umim, twins, is because Sivan is a chaydash of Kabbalah HaTorah. And theoretically, hypothetically speaking, it could have occurred the Metzias that the twins Yaakov and Esav both could have been mekabel the Torah of Vasachas. It wasn't necessarily even according to what we're saying now that is connected to Esav's teva. But the Metzias, if they really, really wanted Torah fakir, Torah changes a person and is mehapik his teva. If they really wanted, they did have the ability to be mekabel the Torah, but they refused. And there's another remez, I forgot where I saw that. If you take a look at the words Nasa and Nishma, so Nasa has the same letters as Esav. Esav was called Esav because he was already also, he was already made. That's Nasa, and Nishma is the same as Yishmael coming to be Merami. Is that this Nasa and Nishma is lav dafka only nisyach esikai? So there could have been a possibility of even Esav and Yishmael being mekalatayr. But they turned it down. And the reason they turned it down is as follows, explains the Vilna Gaon. By the way, I forgot to say that this whole beer of this Agadah Gemara in this Vikuach of Rav Shlomo ben Chananya and the Savid Ve'atuna is basically the Vilna Gaon. He says like this. There's a pasuk that says, Divrei Chachamim, yes, said he about teammates. So we're going to focus on the second metaphor that the Divrei Chachamim is like a yes and like an immovable peg. Yes, said Hibaltima, the peg or a nail that's so tightly fastened into the ground or into the wall that it's immovable. It's not possible to budge this peg. That's what the Rechachama are like. And the Gaon explains, I'm not sure if this beer is from the Gaon himself, but Rabbi Aaron Feldman explains, based on this Gaon, that the inventors of the concept of Nasav and Nishma were the Malachim themselves, because there's a pasuk that says about Malachim, Gibayre Kayach Oisei Devaroi, Lishmoya Bekol Devaroi. It says Oisei, it says Asiya before Lishmoya, before Shemiah. Asiya is already preceded to Shemiah. And he explains why, because by the Malachim are so clear, and they see everything, they see the Ribbono Shel Olam so clear, so clearly in front of them, that they have no doubt that the only thing that's possible to do and accomplish is only the Ratzon HaBayir, is only the Ratzon HaShem. There is no other alternative. So if there is no other alternative, even before they actually do the deed, it's Kilu they did already, because they understand that there is no other alternative besides Ratzon HaShem. And therefore, so when Klal Yisrael said Nasav and Nishma, it's because they were also holding on that Madrega of understanding that there is no other alternative for Chaim, Sain Oil Mazen, Sain Oil Mabo, without Torah. Ain Chaim Ela Torah. There is no other alternative. In fact, the entire Bria can't exist without Torah. So since they understood that there's no other alternative, they were considered like the Malachim, that the Asiya could be credited to them even before the Shemiah, in the same exact fashion as Malachim. And that ties in very well with Yesed Hibaltima. They understood that Torah is something that's immovable. It's either Torah or nothing. It's not. But Mashenkin, the Umas Ha'olam, when they got this proposal of Matan Torah, they asked right away, Mike Sivbe, is it going to fit with us? Is it going to fit with our lifestyle, with our desires, with our insideness? Is it going to fit or not? Not that Torah is an immovable thing and we have to bend ourselves over to Kiyama Torah and to Kabbalah Torah. Is Torah going to fit with us? Meaning, the ones who do not believe that Torah is a yes and hibatim, an immovable thing. Rather, is Torah going to fit with our lifestyle? And with such an attitude, it's not possible to come to Kabbalah Torah, and that's why the attack rejected Torah. In fact, we see even nowadays that the morals and ethics of Goyim are constantly shifting. Why? Because there is no absolute in their lives. According to their desires and according to their political convenience, they're gonna create morals and ethics based upon what's convenient right now. And if that's the case, there's no possibility of them being a tzugi pastor shidduch for the Torah, because Torah has to be to be mekabel the Torah. It has to be understood that this is the only thing. There is no other possibility, and they weren't holding by understanding it. There's a pasuk that says about Torah, "Piryei masak lechiki." The fruits of Torah are sweet to my palate, to my mouth. It says lechiki to my mouth. Right? So the Medrash is Medayik, it's only Masik Lechiki of Klal Yisrael, but to the Umas Ha'olam, Torah and Mitzvahs are bitter kilana, like wormwood. Now, I'll be honest with you, I never tasted wormwood, but this is always a term used that Tanakh and Chazal use to describe something extremely bitter, is kilana, like wormwood, because you could have the exact same item, but if the person is not fitting, it's not fitting to shel tzuta Torah, to bend himself and be mekabel the Torah, so his body or his neshama is going to reject Torah, because to him Torah is bitter. It's if a person is a diabetic, then you can take the sweetest thing in the world. For him, it's going to be poison because he's not right to be mekabel that sweetness. It's not a chisaron. It's not a chisaron in the cake, in the ice cream. It's a chisaron in the person's body, the person's is not able to handle it. The same thing with the woman's son. They are not able to handle Torah, and their bodies and their neshamas reject Torah. So, bottom line, to recap, Rav Shmuel ben Hanan was answering that the fact that the woman's son were not mekabel Torah and Klal Yisrael was, is not because Klal Yisrael was on a lower madrega, and therefore they are more tsugipas, and the woman's son were too high born, class, Torah was too low for them. Rather, the woman's asylum and Torah do not go together. They weren't willing to change their teva and bend themselves over to Torah and make it like a yes to Baal Timite. And Shankin Kleistral was ready and willing, and therefore they were very tzugi pastor for the Torah. His ma'isa with the Yid, Reb Yitzchak Zilber. He's relatively famous. He was a Yid, a Russian Yid who lived there for decades and decades, and he finally escaped towards middle age, or maybe even older, to Eretz Yisrael. So he met up with Rev Huttner once, and he started telling Rev Huttner a little bit about himself, and Rev Huttner was all in the stragish, and he says, you have to take your story and be mefarsimit to the world. So he wrote a book about himself, So one of the things he says when he was younger, obviously everyone knows that there was no Torah in existence in the Soviet Union. His parents happened to have a chashiva, and to instill in them a chashiva for Torah. So he says when he was a teenager going to school in Russia, in the golden motherland, in order to have the privilege of going to college, a person had to volunteer to work during the day, which meant that college hours were at night, the whole day. They had to be working probably 12 hours a day. And if you didn't volunteer to work, then you were undermining the revolution and you got sent straight to Siberia. So with Kitzer, it was a very good idea to volunteer to work when you were a citizen of the Soviet Union. So he used to wake up and daven eights every morning, and then he had to go to work for 12 hours, and then he had to go to college, night school, whatever, and then he had to do his homework. Finally, he finished his homework 2 o'clock in the morning, and he realized he didn't learn anything yet. So he used to stay up another 2 hours every night, sitting and learning Gemara, going to sleep for an hour or two, and then waking up for a vesikin the next day, and going through the same grind every single day. Finally, he was arrested once on some type of trumped up charges, and he was sent to labor camp. And he figured out, someone advised him that if you want to be able to keep jobs over here, you have to find a job that you do alone, and something that you could compensate and do extra work on Arab jobs in order not to have to do it on jobs. So he figured he's going to become a water carrier, even though it used to take a few men, but he decided he'll speak to them, he's going to do it all himself. He's going to become the water carrier for the camp, and no one's going to realize that he's not doing it the seventh day. If he'll provide all the water, he'll provide double water on Erev Shabbos. So that was his mesiras nefesh in order to keep Shabbos. But he realized that he has to go back and forth to the river 12 times a day in order to fill up the buckets. Now, to go to the river and back, each time going to the river and back would take a full hour. So 12 full hours is not leaving him any time to learn. It's Rachmanis, it's a Shreklach. So he decides, what's he going to do? He's going to run. Every single time he's going to run to the river and back with the pails of water, which will come out at the end of every hour. He has an extra 15 minutes. And throughout every 12-hour workday in the camp, he would end up learning 3 hours, 12 times 15 minutes. He would be able to starve himself a nice part of a second seder, 3 hours. So I think these stories reflect the Yesod Hi Baal Timai, that Torah is an immovable thing. If a person realizes that there is no other way, so it doesn't matter. Doesn't make a difference how shred the Masvi finds himself in, but he has to make room for Torah. Another thing he did, so Bein Hasarim, what he would do in order to learn, he found himself a little corner behind a curtain where he was able to store one or two Svarim. And he couldn't have any light on. because people would he would be caught red-handed. So what he did, he trained himself to read, to be able to read in the dark. For all the years that he was in this camp, he forced himself to be able to focus very. I don't know if it's possible to see this, but that, this is what he says. He did. In fact, when he used to speak to relatives after coming to Eretz Yisrael and give them chizuk, he used to demonstrate how he knows how to read in the dark. He would take his, they would turn the lights off, he would put his talis over his head, and he would take a sefer. They would pass him a sefer, and he was able to read in the dark, because for him it was impossible to go without learning Ben Astar. So even though it might be Kineged HaTeva, L'mayim HaTeva, but if Tyre is a yes at Hibal Tima, then there is no other answer. There is no other way to do it. I saw a Maisa, oh, I forgot to say, there's a famous Maisa about Rabbi Yitzchak Zilber's son, who was a teenager, or maybe in his early 20s, when they finally emigrated to Eretz Yisrael. So he's finally free. He wants to go learn in yeshiva. So they arrange for him to take farher by Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. And when he meets Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, he bursts out crying and saying, "Rebbe, please be Michmi, but I lived in a place where it was illegal to learn Torah. The only thing I know is the three Bavas, Gemara, Rashi, Taisus, Balpeh." And he's crying and crying that this is all he was zeichet to learn because he was stuck. He was an einus. He wasn't able to learn anything ever. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz also burst out crying. And that made it even worse. Because he thought Reb Chaim Shmulevitz is crying, because how could it be? How could it be a Yiddish Shabbach knows next to nothing? But Baruch Hashem, he was accepted with flying colors. But he he was mechanic his son, not only for himself, he was mechanic his son. That yes, it's about him, it doesn't matter how shvar the matzav is, but we have to be Isaac and Tyre because there is no other prayer. So I'm going to cut short the next thing. People are under the misconception that some people, not any of us, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to have avadim, is desperate, he needs a nation to serve him, and therefore he went around to all the shlimim u'sayim and kai so because he wanted to be kind of avadim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs someone's help, and therefore he's looking, but nothing can be further than the truth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the whole matara in giving Torah was HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to be native to Brias, and he wanted to build a tremendous ava between himself, Kavyachol, and whoever would be Mekabel the Torah. So a few examples of this, which we don't have time to go into by Rikhus, but the Arachayim Kodesh explains why that Klai Yisrael needed 7 weeks after Yitzias Mitzrayim, just like a Nida needs 7 days to be Mitar herself, Lebayin, Midarais Tzazav, needs 7 days, seven Shivanakiyah to be Mitar herself, Lebayin, so Klai Yisrael needed 7 weeks. But ask the Arachayim, why couldn't they come to Har Sinai right away? Come to Har Sinai, wait over there 7 weeks, says our Chaim, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has so much Ava for Klai Yisrael, it will be much like a Chosin and Kala that are together. They'll find it very hard not to actually go ahead and get married right now on the spot. If Klai Yisrael had already arrived by the Chuppah, Kavyach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it would have been impossible for him to hold back from his chasus with Klai Yisrael. And the whole Matan Torah was done in an oifen of chuppah that it says Hashem Sinai ba. He did like a chazan, takes a few steps forward to greet when the kohen is walking to the chuppah, and it says Vayoytzim Hashem Nikras Selikim Ki Chazan Ayoytzim Nikras Kala. The whole thing was done in an oifen of chuppah, and therefore, and it was also Kafa Lein Harki Gigas. Besides for the fact that it was machriach then, but it was also b'taras chuppah that Har Sinai itself was a chuppah where his chas was between the Eishon and Klal Yisrael took place. There's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim that we're going to finish with this, that says, Yishakeni Minashikas Piu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should kiss us again from the kisses of his mouth. What's that referring to? Because I'll say it's referring to Matan Torah, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said these two divurim of Anoichi and Lo Yiyalecha, it was Kineshikas Chasen V'Kahala. And therefore we ask that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should once again give us these Neshikas of Ava, and it's Taka going to be Mekuyim. We say every week, we say, V'hu Yashmeinu B'rachamav Shein Nisleinei Kol Chai Liyash Lechem Leilekim, and Yashmeinu Lechem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Taka is going to speak directly to us, and tell us Ani Hashem Leilekim. And not only that, it's Le'enei Kol Chai, just like by Har Sinai, as a Cholam, Rayim HaSakadosh, they were able to see. Here also, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Amira, his Neshika to Klal Yisrael of Liyos Lachem Lelikim Ani Hashem Lekechem, is going to be Le'enei Kol Chai, it's going to be Rayim HaSakadosh, you'll be able to actually see it. And the two Neshikas are referring to just like Chasam V'Kala, there's an attitude of we are Chasam and Kala together, and there's also an attitude that no one else could get involved. Those were the two neshikas of Anoichi, I'm Hashem Lekecha, Hashem HaYitzeisicha, I'm the Chasen, you're the Kala, Lo Yiyalecha, and there should be no one else involved in our hiskaris, in our relationship.